ground, and that's really, really frustrating. And I think that begs a number of interesting questions about how it is that the U.S. handles this fight.
I mean, I don't know if people realize the U.S. has launched 21 airstrikes in Yemen, vast majority drones, displacing Pakistan as the epicenter of the covert air war.
Right.
So far this year.
Yeah, what we've seen in just in the past 2 weeks, there have been 9 or 10 strikes. And the U.S. says that they killed the 4 guys that they're looking for. The problem is that they also killed 33 other people who were still struggling to identify. And that's really important. Who are these individuals that the U.S. has killed? It's great if you kill the guys that you're going for. No one in Yemen is upset when a high-value target is killed. What they're upset about are the women and the children and the tribesmen, the civilian casualties. And that's really driving recruitment for Al-Qaeda.
Gregory Johnson, thanks so much for your amazing book, The Last Refuge. We will link to it at democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez, Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke, Renee Feldman, and Shay Dina Gezder. Thanks so much.
This is WHFR. Dearborn, if you'd like to hear more than just the Democracy Now! Show on Fridays here at WHFR, or if you want to hear the show over again, you know, you can listen to the Monday through Friday shows, and they're broadcast from 8 to 9 a.m. Eastern Time every Monday through Friday from their website. Just go to their website and you listen to the podcast, and at this point, we're not rebroadcasting those shows on Monday through Thursday, but the Friday show, we do rebroadcast because we think it's really a great alternative news source, really provocative ideas that we know that you want to hear, because, well, if you do hear them, you'll say that. So it's democracynow.org. Very easy to remember, democracynow.org. I think I said it's WHFR Dearborn. We're coming to you live now from Henry Ford Community College, and it's our public affairs show coming up next, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. It's new because it's not the same as last week. Today is Friday, August the 16th, 2013, and Henry Ford Community College is open. At least the campus is open. If you want to come and register for fall classes, they start next Thursday. Unbelievable. Well, you can come in today, and I think they're probably going to be open in the registrar's office in our Welcome Center building, probably even tomorrow. I bet there's a special session tomorrow. Hasn't been confirmed by anyone here yet, but it's usually typical that the Saturday before they want to try to help you out. So classes open for enrollment for the last couple months. Great number of sections and different classes are available. And today, Friday, yeah, they're open till 4:30. So if you thought, well, they've been closed on Fridays all summer, so they're probably closed today. Nope, today we're open on Friday. And, of course, from now on until next spring, when we try to save money here by just going to a four-day week and require fewer students to drive here 3 days a week, too. Dennis Reimar, my name is Jay Cornick, by the way, station advisor here at WHFR. Dennis Reimar is in the studio. As usual, thank you for being here today, Dennis. He's our WHFR news director.
Thank you for having me. There we go. Yeah. All right. You know how I knew that school was back? At least it was open, if not classes in session. Mm-hmm. That darn air conditioning. I remember to bring my jacket. It gets so cool in here.
That's right.
You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is not a bad thing, but I just as soon as I walked in, I'm like, oh, the air's on.
Theoretically, we have air conditioning all the time on in WHFR. We have a unit independent,
sure,
by the way, from Student Center. But the Student Center is cool now, too.
Yeah.
Usually when we come in the Student Center, because they turn off the air there, they don't need it. The cafeteria's closed. The restaurant's closed on Fridays for the last several months, and now it's on. Everything's open. So I'm just saying, for those of you or for those who know people that want to get started in a new direction, a new career, or get a couple more classes at the college level, Henry Ford Community College is open for business now on Fridays, too. Very exciting. But I want to mention in that regard, finally, though, is that our new policy, well, a couple years old now, but some people still don't know, if you're not enrolled in any class before next Thursday when classes start, you can enroll. Okay. Now, if you are enrolled in some class or classes, you can add and drop if you're going to make changes in the first week for whatever reason. After you attend the first session or two, you think it's not right for you or too basic or not basic enough or whatever, you can add and drop after you get here. But you must be enrolled in classes by the end of the day, Wednesday. That is August 20th. So keep that in mind and tell others that you know that are that maybe haven't registered here yet and want to get going. Time is going quickly. It's amazing. Summer is summer vacation anyway. It's pretty much over now, and it's back to business. So it's back to business on the new WHFR Journal, too. Now, when Dennis came in today, he said, wow, what a week. There's so much happening.
Yep.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course, both internationally and nationally. We try to cover local news and alternative views here on this show. I wanted to pick up just sort of chronologically from the papers, because we look at and we read, and you should too, because we can't cover all the stuff, the local newspapers, Dearborn Press and Guide and Dearborn Times Herald. Okay, stories aren't always the same, and they don't have the same spin on the stories either. Now, last week's show, we did talk about the results of the November election. Or was that week before? No, last week.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Last week.
And so we're not going to go over that. You can go to WHFR.fm, click on talk shows, click on WHFR Journal, and listen to the show from last week Friday, which is August the 9th. Okay, it's our election analysis special. So a lot of things in the paper this week basically just restate what we've already said. So we're not going to cover that again today. So go to the podcast August 9th. They do mention here, school district offers details on SMART, and that's an acronym standing for something, bond proposal that will be on the November ballot. You remember on the show a little while back, I saw a little thing that snuck in there that, oh, the school board has definitely approved that bond proposal. And I talked to Dave Mustin, who is the public information officer for Dearborn Public Schools at homecoming, because he was helping person the table.
Yeah.
He can personalize it. He was there as one of the people setting up and organizing the table. And
was that your politically correct way of saying manning the table?
Yes, we can't say manning.
That's a good job. That's a verb. People.
Because manning was just convicted. So. Okay. So what is that? What's going to be on the ballot proposal for those of you in Dearborn? Well, November 5th is the ballot time. It's going to be a $76 million bond, but it will not increase residents' property taxes. But taxes will drop, of course, if the bond fails. You see, you're currently paying 5.35 mils, and that's what you will continue to pay if this is approved. And it's going for a little bit different things. Older bonds are being paid off, and these new bonds will replace those bonds. So even if approved, it won't be an increase. But it is a new millage proposal. So it's a little confusing. It's new, but in fact, it won't raise the money at all. This is just information here. I'm not recommending it one way or the other. We can't do that. We're kind of part of the school system here.
That's right. And the opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of anyone here at the college anyway.
Right. Exactly. Now, what is it all about? Well, on page 10A of last Sunday's Press and Guide, August the 11th, it does go into deeper details. And, of course, they put it right at the end, because it's so important, right at the end of the first section. But that's because it's got like a whole, oh, my gosh, half page that details all the things that this bond proposal is going to do. And as I said, even though it's called SMART, it's there's a lot of things that are called SMART. There's SMART bombs,
right,
that know exactly how to find a target and turn corners and follow it and go boom. No, this is not targeted in that way. It's just they've decided, because funding is so difficult, that they're moving the general maintenance cost. They have to move them out of the regular budget, the standard millage that they usually pay, to have you approve of them in a separate millage package. So that's just the way. It's because of state funding constantly dropping, and it's and costs going up in other ways, and so this is all needed maintenance. If you read down the list of the different buildings, I'm just jumping around here. Becker Elementary has to get new carpets in one room, new acoustic treatment on the wall of a music room, so that all the band practice doesn't drive everybody else crazy. I mean, doesn't distract them in a wonderful way from their regular lessons. New marker boards. And, you know, you don't have chalkboards anymore, folks. That they found out chalk dust kills.
Yeah.
It's actually a little bit toxic, like breathing. Anyway, and it's a mess to clean up and so on. And so these dry erase marker boards are the way to go. And we've pretty much done that here. But slowly but surely, and even Becker is going to get a new roof, new plumbing fixtures, parking lot resurfacing, and, ooh, a digital sign. Now, no doubt, when you read down this list, not just about Becker, but Bryant and Barry and Etzel Ford and Henry Ford Elementary, William Ford Elementary, Hagon, it's all here. Okay, folks. And I'm sure it's probably on the Dearborn Public Schools website. And just, you know, search for Dearborn Public Schools, and they'll tell you. For example, the Ten Lake Center, part of this, they're going to get a new roof, upgraded mechanical units, and parking lot resurfacing. So it looks like from this, I was looking for that detail, and it's right at the end of the story, I bet they're not going to be deciding for years and years to move into the new City Hall, as I call it, although it's still called the Dearborn Administrative Center by Mayor O'Reilly.
Why do you think so long?
Because they're fixing Tenek. They're fixing it.
But they say the sale has to be, or will be, the final sale on the old City Hall to ArtSpace will be finalized by June 2014.
Right.
So you're saying that doesn't mean anything. They still have to do a lot of...
Well, it doesn't say how much money is going to go to this, but it sounds like everything that was wrong with the Tenek Center, their administrative center...
Sure.
They're going to just pony up the money and fix it. Now, interesting question for, and we may ask Mustanen or Brian Winston here, what's the cost ratio there? How much would it cost them to move Tenek into the administrative center?
Well, that's what we asked Mustanen when he was here. He talked about these smart bonds, and he said that they'd done all the decisions were based on the fact that it would not be cheaper to move into the City Hall.
I'd like to know them dollars.
Yeah, me too.
I really would, because it was previously said and stated over and over, we can't afford to fix Tenek. And this was stated by, if not Mustanen, and other people in Dearborn Public Schools.
Right.
We're going to have to tear down the building and rebuild it. So is this just a cheap fix for this year?
Has to be.
And then they're going to redo some walls and so on in the year after that and after that. So maintenance expense per year may be a lot more expensive than if they moved. But I know they don't want to be part of that because it's too controversial, and even low-level politicians like the Dearborn School Board, you know, they don't want to get involved in controversy, especially when they're actually asking for $76 million.
Right.
And I'm not saying most of that is going to the administrative center repairs, because I don't know, but it seems to me that all these other buildings, and we're talking about also Nolan, McDonald, McCullough, Eunice, the Stout Middle School, Wiltmore Bowles, Lindbergh Elementary, Howell, and, you know, all the schools, they need stuff done. Because the places are falling apart, and they've postponed basic repairs for too many years. So this is real important, folks, and it's important for you to ask these questions. And we're going to be getting someone on the Journal to talk about these details, maybe not building by building, but the overall cost at least, and try to fill you in on what it is you're considering here. Again, even though it's $76 million, it's not new money. But it's true you'd be saving money if you didn't vote for it. Still, how are we going to fix the schools?
Right.
You can't operate any of these schools without these things fixed.
And I know Tenek, that roof is horrible. I mean, that's one of the things that has been. They've talked about that for years. Remember, I used to live a few blocks from there.
Yeah.
Horrible. So.
Yeah. Well, we'll see where that goes. That was, I think. Let's see what else here. That's the Spark proposal. Oh, yeah, I want to jump back, and I've got the Patch.com story somewhere. You know, the Dearborn School Board cut the budget for 2013-2014. Back in June, there was this story, and I'm fairly sure we didn't do it here, but they did pass unanimously, although Mary Lane was not there, but all the other people on the Dearborn Public Schools School Board approved the budget on June 24th. And what did it do? Basically, it approved a budget of $2.1 million for the athletic department. That includes a pay-to-participate fee for students involved in sports and other activities. The district's food service fund is down approximately, so they cut money for the food service. I don't know, what do they do, less food, and will operate at $8 million only for the year. The Adult Ed Fund will receive $2.1 million, down $2.23 million from that in fiscal year. So they're a couple $100,000, $100,000 plus less. And that's amazing to me because I thought now the Dearborn Public Schools Adult Ed has to incorporate or needs to incorporate, please, the adult ed classes that we were offering and very successfully over here, but apparently not too cost effective. And, you know, it's going to cost them more money to, you know, how can they cut money? What classes are they cutting out? Basket weaving? Joking. I don't know. Basket weaving and fly bait casting were considered in my day in the 60s as these totally ridiculous, extraneous classes offered in the physical ed departments.
Were they legitimate?
If you needed extra 1 credit hour classes. Not here, like at Michigan State University.
There really was a class for basket weaving.
And fly bait casting. No, you know, fishermen would love to have a class in that if they were trying to learn how to do it
well. It's
very
difficult. Right,
yeah. But even basket weaving is not easy. It's just, is it one of those essential life skills that you need as a credit class in a four-year school?
Right.
That's the question.
Good question.
So, you know, certainly in adult ed, that's quite appropriate, you know, to have fly bait casting and maybe even basket weaving. I can't believe it. I even did basket weaving in my art classes in high school. That's how big it was in the Stone Age.
You just took my joke away.
I know.
So wait a minute. So we do not have adult, like, continuing ed right now.
No. So-called Center for Lifelong Learning is gone. It's dead here at Henry Ford Community College.
Well, what's really interesting is this past Monday, the new president of the college, Dr. Stan Jensen, was interviewed on the Mayor Dan Pletko show, of which I helped produce.
Yes, you were there.
And he was talking about the school and how great it is, and one of the things he actually said was, you know, and if you're later in life, if you have something that you would like to come back and learn, this is a great opportunity. And I meant to ask him, does that mean you want to put this back on the table? But he got distracted, as did I. So I didn't know came up.
There are many things that coincidentally our college credit, and that's all we can talk about right now until they reestablish CL2, maybe once we're on a sound economic footing again. Again, I heard conflicting things about that. First of all, when they first canceled it, I heard the general story at the college was it was making money for the college.
Okay.
And then I find out, it's losing like $200,000 a year or something.
Wow.
So what numbers are they looking at?
Right.
I mean, is it because they want to rent the office space to somebody else that's going to bring in income? Or I don't know. And, I mean, you know, I do trust our new president. I was going to say as far as I can throw him, but he's a heavy guy. So, very heavy. And you know, I don't think that he's fudged the numbers there. But what numbers were people looking at when they said it was making money for us?
Right, right.
I know I was teaching the WHFR staff training class for credit here at Henry Ford Community College, and I still am, to train volunteers for our WHFR radio station, which is required. You got to go through that class. But now it's a credit class only, unless you talk to Susan McGraw, our general manager, at 313-845-9842. Maybe she can cut you a deal. But I was teaching the CL2 version, which is exactly the same, for free, just because I thought it was the thing to do. I mean, the students still had to pay money, so they were making a lot of money on my teaching for free, the CL2 class. Two or three people a year. Okay, four or five people. It was about five or six people, actually, a year, taking it from the community through CL2. So I know that was making money for them, I don't know about the other things. Also, but the worst part of the budget, so they cut food service, they cut athletics a little bit, and they laid off 7 more teachers. And what kind of teachers were they? 2 bilingual teachers.
Mm.
I thought Crestwood already proved that if you don't have enough bilingual teachers, or teachers at least that speak Arabic, I don't know if they have to be bilingual instructors, but they have to have so many teachers in Crestwood. It's been proven by a court ruling a month or two ago that they're going to have to hire more teachers who themselves are bilingual in English and Arabic. And so I don't know. Which bilingual, what were they bilingual in? Arabic? Both of their last names, and I won't mention them here, seem Arabic.
Okay.
So how can we get rid of two when it was just a court ruling that you needed to have a certain number? Maybe now that we know the exact percentage, we're not going to have any extra ones.
But this is in Dearborn, correct?
This is Dearborn.
Well, guess what? Dearborn Heights might be hiring these two people.
Yeah,
might
well,
be
right. They're looking for
right
somebody.
Sure.
Yeah, to, and I don't know if they already have replaced. They must. They're going to have to replace those people that they say they're deficit in.
And I don't want to make light of that situation at Crosswood because it was, obviously, like you said, it got national attention.
Mm-hmm. And a math science teacher was laid off at Dearborn High School. I thought we need all the math and science we can get for the future. How dare you? You know what? My daughter was telling me about this. You've heard about the core curriculum requirements now, which is a statewide plan. The core, it turns out that's for math and English, not science. They don't care about science now. So her program, which is science in Southfield Public Schools, they don't get any support of any money or any special attention at all now because it doesn't matter if the kids do really bad in science. They have to do well in math and English to please the state of Michigan. Just that, math and English.
Right.
And to me, math is the facilitator of science. That math doesn't make any sense without the science component, where science is the real world where things are happening and you're trying to figure out why and predict them, and you need math skills to help you with that.
And the opposite could be true. They support each other very well.
Well, of course they do.
Sure.
But, you know, I know they can come up with math problems like, if you go to Walmart and you've only got $100 and you've, you know, there's sales at 20% off for this and 40% off for that, can you afford it without shaking the hand of the greeter? You know, when you come in.
And
that's it. Well, they often, and story problems, they have distracting elements.
Yeah.
That, no, they're on purpose.
That,
they
say, well, that's
information. That's a fact. But that has nothing to do with solving the problem, whether or not you shake the hand of the greeter. You know, so,
right.
I mean, you can come up with these sort of real world myth problems, but who the heck cares? Now, what's more important is another person that was laid off, this is at Fortson, is a life management teacher.
Okay.
I'd like to know what that is.
That sounds pretty...
Because there's nothing more important than life management.
No,
whatever,
right.
I mean, in general.
Sure.
What could be more important than that? I mean, that's health.
Right.
That's nutrition. That's exercise. That's budget, finances. Right?
Right.
You know, how to survive at Walmart on a budget.
Yeah, $100.
I mean, ideally, life management should be the number one skill.
Sure, there shouldn't be anybody left.
I mean, because it's all application to things you need to know.
It's and very vague.
I know I went through high school, okay, in the 60s, but only one class had immediate relevance. Others had relevance when I got to college for classes I needed in college, and that was what they called general business. They actually taught me about savings accounts and checking accounts and credit cards. And my daughter, when she graduated in the 90s from Fortson High School, Edsel Ford in Dearborn here, had no idea. I said, well, you know, before you go to college, you need to open a checking account. And what's that? How do I do that? How do I decide? Oh, my God. They never taught you basic financial skills?
You just assume they did.
In high school?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I mean, talk about a life management skill. I don't know what that is, but... you know,
I want to find out now
how to take only good drugs, not bad drugs. In a way, you know, drug savvy and pop culture drug savvy is something that should be taught. Not just say no, but actually. And I'm sorry, I got to toss it in here, folks, because nobody likes to hear about it anymore. But sex education, okay? All the different things: how to make babies, how not to, why to wait, why not to wait, how to enjoy your body in a way that's not harmful to others. I know that gets controversial. Yes, parents should do it at home, but how many uneducated kids do we have out there? How many unwed mothers and how, you know, and babies while you're still in high school and that? You know, that's not under control yet, folks, and I think there's got to be that education somewhere, and I think it can be done appropriately in schools, but I think they pretty much killed all sex ed programs.
But they definitely would qualify it again under life
management.
Yeah,
well, for absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's almost like a counseling.
I mean,
in a
sex
sense.
Is part of life.
Sure.
I mean, if your parents didn't have sex, where would you be today?
Exactly.
You know, I mean, you wouldn't be here. So, so I'm sorry, we lost another life management teacher, one at Fortson in this case. And but do we have any left? I mean, is there more life management teachers around? I want to ask Wisdom when we get him. What the heck is life management?
I have to know too.
I got him. This is important. We lost a business teacher at Dearborn High School. We lost an industrial arts teacher at Stout Middle School.
Interesting.
Now, industrial arts, when I took them, that's a fancy name for shop class.
Right.
That we just did woodworking and metalworking.
A little bit of metal. Yeah.
Little metal. Not too loud, though.
You didn't weld or anything like that. Nothing that.
Get that little bit of metal, but not too loud.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Oh, you're on a roll today.
Yeah. And you got to listen close to the show, folks.
Or don't.
And take notes.
yeah.
Business teacher at Dearborn High. Well, there goes business. And another industrial, I mentioned industrial arts at Stout. Now, I actually was, it's amazing, I learned so much about how to use basic tools that I became the person around my parents' house that could fix things. We had little electrical things, like rewiring electrical sockets, and we made little lamps and that, and so they told us about plus and minus and make sure the fuse box is turned off before you do something weird. And so the basic skills of using tools, you know, DIY, do-it-yourself projects, it was actually taught to me as an elective class at my high school when I graduated. I think it 2 years or something. And I was actually kind of good at it, as it turned out. So I'm still fixing things around my own house.
And around the
saving
station.
Saving some money. And around the station, yes. I was just here Wednesday for 3 hours doing that. But
we don't know what we do without
and,
you.
And last but not least, a foreign language teacher at Etzel Ford and Dearborn High. I guess they were sharing one. Sharing one? Yeah, because it says
they
were both schools.
They didn't leave a name by chance, did they? Is there a name?
Yes, but I won't mention on the air because I'm sad for them.
Yeah, me too.
They've been fired, if you will, laid off.
My son took a few of foreign languages over at Etzel Ford.
But the problem is, state of Michigan, aren't they still requiring foreign language for graduating from high school?
Yeah.
So what language was this person teaching?
Good question.
That is non-essential now.
And so often
was it just like Japanese or something? That's again.
It's there.
Very important in the business world internationally. Spanish certainly is very important in the world, as well as still French and German and to a certain extent Russian. Severstal, right in town. You could get a job at Severstal speaking Russian during the interview. Oh, boy. Yeah. Anyway, what language? I'd like to know. Inquiring minds. But you can ask too many of these questions, you know. So, and, of course, Trustee James Schoolmaster. And he should know about schools, right?
Sure.
While it is always difficult when we have to lay off teachers due to budget constraints and due to the reappointment of teachers returning from leaves of absence. Ooh, how many came back? And what kind of leaves of absence were they on? Sick leaves?
This interview with Whiston's basically writing itself,
yeah.
Isn't it?
He says the decision to lay off 7 faculty members is in accordance with the agreement with our teachers union. Which, are they talking about seniority? I thought seniority was gone.
That's what we were told in the paper.
It is for my daughter at her school, in public school in Southfield. Now, they could still follow the contract if they want to, but they don't have to. The school board said, well, the contract says one thing, but, you know, the state of Michigan says the heck with seniority as a criteria for anything. And so when those teachers came back, they just take their same jobs, but were some of these people that were laid off in their jobs?
So maybe they knew going in that the job was short-term.
So maybe we didn't actually, I mean, maybe it's the
really,
same.
It's not really losing.
I mean, maybe 7 came back in the same jobs that the 7 were just sort of there temporarily for
and
1 year.
That was
year.
On patch?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was back in June, but I didn't even see it in the press and guide. Again, there are a lot of stories there, and
right.
Can't read everything. But anyway, so moving on now, it's WHFR Journal, and oh boy, 25 minutes past. We have Jim Hightower coming up in 5 minutes with a couple of comments about corporate greed. Have you heard about that? Yeah, well, still going on. One, which is, and Dennis will know here, isn't Monsanto, aren't they based in Michigan?
Yeah,
they have a big facility up in around Mount Pleasant somewhere.
And if you believe the sociology books here at the college, they're bad people.
Well, now they have a special website. Ooh. So they can't be all bad. But Jim Hightower reveals what's actually on the website.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Okay. But let's see. Sneaking another story in here. From last Sunday, by the way, a couple good opinions. And you should read Morris Goodman's A Nation Divided. Because there is a problem with polarization, mm-hmm. with too many different groups and everybody wanting to fight each other, and sounds like our Congress, huh? And nobody coming together for a positive solution. So yeah, it's very well spoken, but it's kind of long, and we're halfway through now, just on the schools. Oh well, Times Herald. From this last Wednesday, Henry Ford Community College has hired a new vice president of finance. Now Marge Swan has left the college, taken a position somewhere else. So she was our called it controller. I think maybe VP of finance might have been her title too, or maybe they came up with a new title. Very exciting. Mm-hmm. Well, who is this person? Just so we know who to blame.
John,
I mean,
S.
when more money we find in doubt is John S. Satkowski. And he's going to be overseeing all financial activities and functions here. So we kind of cleaned the deck. We got rid of the president, and we got rid of the, they're gone, the controller. And so we have these new people here to decide new things. Satkowski is a 22-year veteran of higher education with 9 years of work at the Medical College of Ohio, which is now the University of Toledo Medical Center.
Yeah.
They've been acquired, I guess. 7 years at the University of Toledo itself and 6 years at Owens Community College in Toledo. So say hey to Toledo. And what big manufacturing industry or producer, what kind of car is made in Toledo?
What kind?
Jeeps. And they just expanded that factory. It's not just the Wrangler, but now the new Jeep Cherokee, which looks like a shark, kind of.
They're very different, though. The Wrangler, I mean, one.
Well, the Cherokee is brand new. It replaced the car called, not the Grand Cherokee. No, that's built in Detroit. This is the Cherokee that replaced the Jeep Liberty.
Got it.
Which is a boxy kind of car.
Like, that was the answer to the Escape.
Right.
Okay.
It was the Liberty size car originally was called the Jeep Cherokee, and then they came up with a Grand Cherokee, the bigger one that we still have, and now they decided to get rid of the Liberty name, and they came up with a whole new car, whole new size and shape, and I had a Cherokee in the 90s. I liked boxy.
Yeah,
I did.
So
I really. They put a ton of money into this new plant, and I thought, ooh, maybe I'll take a tour. They must have a tour, you know.
No.
Building. No, it's totally private and hyper-secret.
Hmm.
Even Jeep fans, people in Jeep fan clubs and so on, they want to go down and tour the Jeep plant where their car was born.
Right.
Nope, can't do that. It's absolutely top-secret stuff.
Interesting.
Must be all robotic, you know. The robots are actually controlling the whole factory. They have artificial intelligence. They've just become super smart, and so nobody needs to know about that. But I'm saying Toledo is almost close enough to say it's local, and I'm all for Chrysler Corporation building Grand Cherokees in Detroit, and I think Dodge Vipers are built in Detroit too, and so we do still have a lot of industry here and nearby, and the Jeeps are a real success story. In fact, the Jeeps, they thought when Chrysler went through the bankruptcy, that would be the only thing some other company would want to buy. Because they've been making money consistently.
Absolutely.
All through the years, although they still have a few clunky models, like, in my personal opinion, Compass, Patriot. Ugh.
But the Jeep was originally, wasn't that an AMC, American Motor Car?
Yes.
And they went under, so they
bought
out Chrysler.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My brother has one. He loves it. He replaces one each year with another Jeep. Loves it.
Right. Now it's the current model, Wrangler, as it's called, is actually the model designation is JK.
Really?
Which is my initials.
Just kidding.
I don't have one, but still, that's so sweet. I thought I would mention, so anyway, welcome, Mr. Satkowski, or VP, Vice Pres Satkowski. He's also especially known for information technology system design and implementation. So we certainly need that. Maybe we ought to get a computer over there in the finance office. What do you think, Dennis?
I think that would be a great idea.
Yeah, I bet he brought a computer with him.
Yeah. No more abacus.
Because $16.6 million, I don't think a computer would forget about that easily. But
I think we're probably...
Yeah. By the way, I want to say on that point, because I haven't seen the story here, but you know, Henry Ford Community College teachers just voted a new contract to help out that deficit. And our union and the teachers, the full-time teachers, were extremely generous. They're just taking what they expected, or less than they expected, 1% increase or so this year, and I'm maybe misstating, and then nothing more, no pay increase for 4 more years after that. Oh, my God. So, and they took big benefit hits, as I mentioned to the president when he was here a couple weeks ago, just three years ago. Anticipating, you know, the crisis that everybody was going to feel eventually. So thank you, AFT Local 1650, for helping in this cause. Oh yeah, Jim Hightower, you want to hear what's happening out there in corporate world? So here he comes. Two commentaries. Listen up. This is important stuff. And one about Monsanto, which is right here in Michigan.
The failure of our corporate and political leaders to make sure every worker gets good health care
is causing some unpleasant consequences, not just for them, but for all of us. Consequences like stomach flu. Ill workers often spread illness. This is because millions of employees who deal directly with the public, as well as with co-workers, are not covered by paid sick leave policies. So, when they come down with something like stomach flu, they still tend to drag themselves to work rather than going to bed until they recover. For staying home means a loss of pay, or even loss of their jobs. Low-wage workers, such as those in the restaurant industry, are particularly vulnerable and, since they handle food, particularly threatening. Nearly 80% of America's food service workers receive no paid sick leave, and researchers have found that about half of them go to work ill because they fear losing their jobs if they don't. As a result, a study by the Centers for Disease Control finds that ill workers are causing as much as 80% of America's stomach flu outbreaks, which is one reason that CDC officials have declared our country's lack of paid sick leave to be a major public health threat. You'd think the industry itself would be horrified enough by this endangerment of its workforce and customers that it would either take the obvious curative step of providing the leave or of pushing in the name of public safety for a public sick leave program. But, au contraire, amigos, such huge and hugely profitable chains as McDonald's, Red Lobster, and Taco Bell not only fail to provide such sensible care for their employees, but have lobbied furiously against city and state efforts to require paid sick days. This is Jim Hightower saying, all top executives who never touch the food their chains serve get paid sick leave. For them to deny it to workers is idiotic, short-sighted, and even more sickening than stomach flu.
What do the corporate powers from Wall Street to Walmart have in common? They hate the Hightower Lowdown. You can see why at www.hightowerlowdown.org.
Excellent news, consumers. Biotech giants that have been secretly inserting genetically engineered organisms into thousands of food products you buy have just announced that they're coming clean. Wow, you mean no more GMO frankenfood ingredients will be slipped into our diets? Oh, come on. These are food profiteers, so they're not about to come that clean. So maybe they're agreeing at last and at least to label any products that contain ingredients with tampered DNA. No, no, right-to-know labeling is what food tamperers fear most, for they know we won't buy those items if we know what's in them. Okay, then, what do they actually intend to do? They're giving us a website. Say what? Yes, the entirety of their grand gesture of, quote, corporate transparency is to put a mess of PR and useless gobbledygook on a slick site called GMOAnswers.com. They say we can ask virtually any question, and their experts will be happy to tell us why GMOs are good for us. In other words, come clean is an industry euphemism for whitewash. The website will be controlled by, and its answers written by, agents of Monsanto and a handful of other corporations that control the dangerous and deceitful genetic manipulation industry. We want to get into the conversation with those opposed to GMOs, stated a biotech exec, ignoring the fact that these same industry schemers did not allow any opponents into the conversation they had in back rooms with our government officials when they conspired to force these nasties on our families without our knowledge. This is Jim Hightower saying, Monsanto and gang are notorious liars, political manipulators, and thugs. They can put all the propaganda they want on their Wizard of Oz website, but like putting earrings on a hog, it can't hide their ugliness.
Hightower's commentary is brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown. From Wall Street to Washington, this monthly newsletter reveals who's doing what to whom and why. Check it out, HightowerLowdown.org.
You're listening to the new WHFR Journal for August the 16th, 2013. Hi, my name is Jay Koronek, and Dennis Reimars and I are here today with you talking about the news in the area and so many different things happening. And often when we have a special guest, we can't always cover what might be called the little stories that still take us 5 or 10 or 20 minutes to discuss, but that's the way it goes. I wanted to comment on a really nice thing that happened. Former Michigan State Senator David Plawecki passed away on the last day of homecoming, as a matter of fact, August the 4th. And at his funeral, now he knew he was, I think, suffering from cancer. He had only a couple months to live when he knew that it was going to be the end soon. And so he gave instructions to his family to give checks for $100 each to everyone that came into his funeral. And by the way, he was 65 years old. He had a six-month battle with bile duct cancer. And so this is what he wanted to be done. And he explained his wishes 2 days before he died to his sons.
But he also put a note, a typed note.
Yes. Now, it's important that these people, when they receive it, are instructed that be a Christian angel and give the $100 bill to someone before the holidays. Which holiday are we talking about? Labor Day is a holiday, isn't it? Whether it's a struggling family, a single parent in need, or someone else. Even if it takes some time, most who receive this gift will have their hearts touched, he wrote. My faith tells me this is the time for us to renew our commitment to helping others. And so, according to the Press and Guide article, also from Wednesday, this totaled more than $14,000 that was given to people that came to the funeral, or mourners, or as it said in another place, the wake. So I'm not sure what was, you know, wake, a funeral, a visitation counted, whatever it was, the, you know, about 140 some people got checks for $100 each with the instruction to pay it forward. Here's comment from someone who won the last Dearborn City Council race.
That's right. Stephen Dabkowski Jr. said, Dave is a class act. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever met. Someone I know who lives in the streets in Dearborn will be getting their $100 on Friday.
Implying that he's going to give it, pay it forward right away.
That's right.
Himself. And, I mean, he's a retired person living on very limited income, I know. Many people in Dearborn are, of course. But the instructions are good. If you give it to someone who's very needy, you need to suggest to them, too, as soon as you sort of made your way back, if you can at all, then feel compelled, feel encouraged to pay it forward, which means give $100 to someone else who needs it. And imagine, I mean, all the people that have steady incomes and are rich, imagine what would happen if you could afford it, if every day, once a year even, you gave someone that needed it $100 with those same instructions. I don't think we're really all that compassionate. I'm afraid self-interest and the material world always attacks us, you know, and we're nothing if we're not buying all the time and displaying it on ourselves or with ourselves or around ourselves somehow, and so it'll be very difficult to do. But
But stories like these always get people to think, and I think that's the beginning.
I'm sorry to say David Plawecki was never on the WHFR Journal because we mostly talk to people from the Dearborn area, but I've heard only good things about him while he was a state senator, too. He was a Democrat. Does that matter? No, not necessarily, but he was a great person, and this was a great idea. And but his family is out $14,000 now. But
I didn't want to say it.
Yeah.
All right.
Nonetheless.
Lots going on.
Okay. We don't usually talk about Melvindale and Allen Park, but real briefly, the Dearborn Times-Herald, this is a reason to subscribe to the Times-Herald, on page 2A. I didn't think it was on page 2, maybe.
Yes.
Is it 3A? 2A.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. They're city councilors, and I always called them council persons, but I saw in several stories now that collectively they're called councilors.
Councilors, that's right.
But it's spelled differently than the counselor in high school or college.
Yep.
It's spelled differently.
Yep.
Ooh. So anyway, Melvindale city councilors walked out of the meeting. Can you summarize quickly, Dennis, why you did that?
Basically, three of them at least had a problem with a previous the city attorney, corporate counsel, wanted the council people to have a gag order. Basically, they didn't want anybody in the city government or anybody that worked for the city to talk to the media. And certain council people thought that wasn't right. a gag order did not was not appropriate. So,
what kind of state secrets do they have in Melvindale? Well, give me a break.
We'll never know, right?
Now, other than the contract with the fire department here in Dearborn, which Dennis, you mentioned, there's still some final issues with that merging.
Yeah, there's monetary issues and how the city of Melvindale will pay back money or pay the city of Dearborn money
for that service. Yeah.
For the service, mm-hmm. And it's like payments of $104,000, but per year. But the city of Melvindale is trying to get some state funding that would cover that. So it seems like, as you've pointed out in the past, it looked like a bigger deal from the headline. But then as you read on, it's something that looks like eventually, sooner rather than later, will be figured out.
So I don't think the gag order was about that. But imagine the city attorney. Of course, attorneys, sure. There won't be as many lawsuits if people don't open their big mouth to the media, that is anybody that's going to be listening, and put it on radio or TV or in the papers. Okay, so you're minimizing the chances for lawsuits. And just this is the segue to Allen Park. Allen Park's ethics board, and there's an ethics commission in Dearborn too, found one of their councilmen, DeJulio, Anthony DeJulio, I believe. It's on page 5A there, Dennis.
Okay.
He's got the paper. That he was unethical. And what he, I can't say exactly what he said, but he disparaged in significant ways two policemen. I think one retired in Allen Park.
That's exactly what they said. They found DeJulio,
I think, or whatever. Okay.
Guilty of violating two ethical principles held for government officials, the principle of respectability and fitness for public office, and the principle of congeniality and productivity, with his actions and words toward police officer Wayne Albright and retired police officer Russell Pillar. So
now we know if it was slander, because he must have said it in public. If it was slander, in other words, if those charges were untrue, then, and he said that they were criminals or something substantive like that, that cast them in a very bad light, then they could sue him. They could sue him in a civil court for slander. And apparently there were enough witnesses. But we don't know the content of that. I can't speak. I'm not a lawyer on that. It's interesting. Would that the city defend the council person if he was charged of slandering these two police officers, one retired? I don't know. But so, I don't believe in gag orders. I believe in openness in government. And I even have an editorial here by Paul Krugman that came in today's New York Times called Truthiness, which is a Stephen Colbert coined word. But
let's go back just real briefly back to Melvindale for a second. This is the second time that people have walked out of a meeting and it was canceled since July 3rd.
But it's becoming a popular way to show
absolutely
your displeasure.
And obviously this one had the backing. So they have six councilors, mm-hmm. as they say, and then the mayor. They voted, he voted on this particular, the gag order. The mayor took the side of the three
gagging.
That were,
no,
exactly, and so they walked out. And they said, well, we can't continue. Well, they didn't have a quorum then.
Right.
They
couldn't do anything else after
that. They had to do with things that were non-voting things.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Uh-huh. So. Yeah. Well, have fun down there, Melvindale folks, sure, it's a problem whenever legislators or councilors walk out of a meeting, then nothing can happen after that, but it certainly does get press coverage, I will say that, and it does therefore raise the question. So they have this gag order going in Melvindale?
I don't know that it's an actual gag order, and I apologize. I misread something. The reason why this meeting broke up was because one of the very the second thing they brought up to vote on was to adjourn.
Oh.
And that's what the mayor broke the tie, and they said, no, we're not going to adjourn. And that's when the three said, well, we are, and they left.
Yeah, because the smart thing to do would be because if the gag order was coming up for a vote, then they walk out.
Exactly.
They walk out before the vote, and that would prevent it from going through.
But this is not, it's not being voted on yet. It's just some disagreement over the...
so wrong. I do believe, and I've run up this, run up against this as a journalist, that in many cities, including Dearborn, the police officers are not allowed, that they have a gag order, they are not allowed to talk to the media without permission from their supervisor
or
the chief himself or whatever. Yeah.
I've filmed
this is extremely common.
I filmed a parade in South Lyon where I now reside, and I could not talk to one of the policemen I know personally, because I'm very good friends with his sister, and he could not talk to me without permission for a parade. So, yeah, you're right. It is a very strong.
Because if they express an opinion, it becomes the opinion of the city or whatever, and And it might cast somebody in a bad light, so, oh my gosh. Okay, moving right on here at WHFR.FM, a station making waves about 12 minutes before Highway 61, the best in the blues for 4 hours on Friday afternoons with Joanne Kay coming up. So stay tuned for that, of course. But next, I'm going to mention the garage ordinance. It is heading to City Council. It's in the Wednesday edition, the Press and Guide here. And, boy, this goes on and on forever, too, yeah. Here. But after 6 months of deliberations, which included a great deal of public feedback, the Planning Commission is sending its recommendation to the Council. The Commission voted 8-0 with one absent. There's always somebody absent.
It has to be.
Yeah. Monday to approve the revision, which places an emphasis on prohibiting garages as living spaces. Now, so there's all these details, and there's a lot of difference of opinion here, because some people that have garages built in an inappropriate way, they're going to have to change it, or they will get a citation if this passes. Now, let's turn to page 5A and see when this is going to the council. And of course, maybe the council can take it up whenever they want to. I don't know. The next meeting.
Maybe after the election.
Yeah, well, sometime in September. No, I bet it's coming up in September. But, yeah, they might want to table it for a while, because they probably have some sessions at the council level where they have people come in to make comments.
Absolutely.
Too. So that might delay it until after the election. And
How
yeah.
convenient. Right?
Yeah, so because you don't want to lose an election just over a garage, you know.
No. This is a big thing, though. Especially
well, it is a big thing with a lot of people that use their garage in for things other than cars. And I know that in... It boggles my mind, but there you go. You know, there's health and safety issues here, folks, first of all. But there's also issues about property values. Does it look standard in a traditional sort of way? If it doesn't, it does threaten the value of homes in that area. I'm sorry. That's the fact, Jack. That's why, I mean, I live in a historic district, and in Dearborn there's several. And we have a committee made up of people, our own residents that we elect, who decide on, and we have guidelines about what kind of designs for windows. Like, all the windows have to have the little slats in the middle, you know, that make little window panes out of a big window. Uh-huh. I forget what they're called.
They quarters it, though, basically. Right?
Or more, depending on how big the window is.
Sure, sure.
But if you don't have those little window slats, and apparently you buy windows without them, and now... You just add the slats. You just pop them in from the inside. They're plastic, and they just pop in to split up the window. Yeah. And it looks the same from the outside.
Right.
But they don't have to manufacture it in that way, which would be very costly, having separate little panes of glass
right.
for every little area. But I'm just saying, when you buy into that kind of district, you know that there's regulations like that. Like, nobody can build a fence. You can't fence your yard in my neighborhood. Why? Because that's the way it is. I mean, it's designed as a New England community, cityscape, where, you know, you have little parks and you have the streets are mostly cul-de-sacs with walks between the cul-de-sacs at the end. It's a hard thing to explain, but it's Springwells Park, folks.
Sidewalks? Do you have sidewalks?
No. Not in front of the house, so you don't have to shovel sidewalks.
Yeah, but where do people, they have to walk in the street?
Yeah, they walk in the street because nobody pulls up into a cul-de-sac. No. Nobody's going 100 miles in a cul-de-sac because it's only like six houses and you run into the end, you
That's
know.
True.
So there's little turnarounds at the end, but I mean...
I've been in there, I know.
Oh, I'll tell you the waste management trucks, those turnarounds are so small, they've got to go back and forth three times before they can get around.
Yeah.
The corner.
They love you guys.
They can't back up. No, it takes them a lot longer in a cul-de-sac. But I'm just saying, we understand that it's keeping the historic district and that New England-style look, small community-type look. And, you know, most neighborhoods don't have a small community-type look. They have a large community look, which is just a bunch of streets.
A grid, yeah.
A grid, yeah. But, oh, well. So here's a couple of the things, just real fast. One of the rule among the many rules in the proposed ordinance, one garage is permitted per residential lot, and it's intended to provide off-street vehicular parking and incidental household storage. This they cannot be used for any commercial purpose or lease to someone other than the house's owner and tenant. So you can't sell your garage space to somebody else to put their car there.
That never would have occurred to me, but
yeah,
people do stuff.
All they think of these things in Dearborn. No garage can be converted. Number two, no garage can be converted into a habitable space, which includes living, sleeping, eating, or cooking. So any one of those. Okay, you can't have anything like that in there. Bathroom and open flame heaters are also prohibited. Can't have a bathroom in your garage. And garages can be used for social gatherings like parties as long as there's no physical conversion of the garage. Faucets and utility sinks that meet the city code are permitted, as is basic electrical service for, quote, minor repairs or hobbies, like working on your car.
Sure.
So you can have a sink, you can have hot, cold water. I don't know if hot water, you'd need a hot water tank
what
for that.
Can you do laundry in your garage? Is that not...
I would say no,
huh.
But... ask the city, if approved, of course.
Right.
Garages must be enclosed only by a non-transparent overhead retractable door. Non-transparent. It goes up above you. A retractable door that allows vehicles to enter and exit freely. Other types of garage doors that are consistent with the home's architecture, like carriage doors, can be used if the city approves. Carriage doors are open to the side
mm-hmm.
for the whole... I know in Grosse Pointe, sometimes I've driven through there years ago. There's a lot of that.
Groseal does too.
Groseal,
yep.
Right?
So, and that's really from what I understand at the actual meeting, the people that had the loudest voice against this proposed ordinance are the ones that have the glass doors already.
Yeah, because point number four, sliding glass doors are permitted on the side or back, but not the front.
And that people have already put the
right.
expense for
oh,
it.
Oh yeah,
to do
that. Those are big and those cost
absolutely
thousands. Yeah.
Yeah.
Renovations like permanent enclosure of a garage with a framed wall, brick siding, or other materials require city permits. And that might be possible, but to make your garage a little more secure or stable or even more insulated for the sake of your car over Michigan winters or something. So there's the garage ordinance. We think it'll come up at the next council meeting one way or the other, but I think, isn't there a reading 1 month and then a final vote? And I bet they have a public hearing in between.
Right.
So that could delay it past November. So
I wouldn't be surprised.
It doesn't have to be a campaign
and
question.
Right, and it doesn't have to be consecutive, like you don't have to talk about it at the next meeting.
Right.
We have a couple of things going on. I just want
go
to make
ahead.
Sure we
yeah.
cover
yeah.
them.
Yeah.
I had the opportunity this past week to interview Dave Brogan, the fire marshal for the city of Dearborn Heights, and he shared with myself as well as all the viewers that there is a big chili cook-off tomorrow. Yep, chili cook-off.
Yes, I have it in front
Parkland
of me here.
Park.
It's in Dearborn Heights. Firefighters' 21st annual chili cook-off, Saturday, that's tomorrow, 17th, Parkland Park, Ann Arbor Trail at Parkland Street.
Mm-hmm.
For those that don't
it's
go to Dearborn
really
Heights
easy
much.
To get there.
Where is there another cross street there with Ann Arbor Trail?
Yes.
Is
you know
it's obviously must be west of Telegraph?
Do you know? No, it's east
of Telegraph.
You know, the
okay.
easiest way to get there is mm-hmm. as you're leaving the college, if you're on Evergreen,
yeah.
and you go toward Detroit, so it'd be going north.
North
if you make
Evergreen,
a left yeah. on a street called Paul, which is the first major light at the other side of Ford Road,
mm-hmm.
if you make a left there, it's a residential street, 25 miles an hour, it turns right into Riverside Drive, and on your right-hand side is Parkland. I highly, highly, please listen to me, folks, recommend driving 25 miles an hour because there are police everywhere there.
Yeah, Dearborn Heights is known for their
that is a
enforcement
trap.
of 1 mile an hour over speeding tickets.
So it's like Outer Drive and Warren.
But the event, which, again, it's going from noon to dusk.
Yeah,
dusk.
Benny and the Jets are going
to
be there.
Everybody's going to turn to dusk later in the day. That's obviously sunset, which is 9:30-ish.
Not even now. About 8:30.
10 o'clock? Oh.
Yeah, now that it's getting later.
Oh, it's getting later. Yeah, summer's over.
Yes.
So anyway, noon to 8:30 maybe about there.
Mm-hmm.
The event will include music, food and beverages, kids games, prizes, raffles, face painting, a moonwalk, and more.
Most of this is free, but the food and beverage are not. And the musical entertainment is Benny and the Jets, one of the bands, and that's free.
Always popular. Proceeds will benefit the Great Lakes Burn Camp, which is always a great cause.
That's
there's
great
still a lot of
those.
People getting burned out there, unfortunately.
And their goals, as it was last year and the year before, is $10,000, and they raised it last year. And all you do, you buy tickets to try the chili. and it's like a buck for a ticket. You donate, and there's last year I think there were 15 or 16 different kinds of chili. Some of them are really kind of crazy, you know, chili with fish, a cream base or something like that. Some of them are very hot, but Dave says he's tried most of them, and they're awesome, really good.
And he must have survived, yeah.
Yes, good, real good guy. Yeah.
A few more events, just finishing up here on the WHFR Journal for today. Dearborn Animal Shelter Adopt-A-Thon. This time it's going to be at the Westbourne Mall in Dearborn tomorrow, Saturday, from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. As I mentioned last week, there are just tons of kittens, but they'll have kittens, cats, older cats, and dogs. Up to 80 animals will be available for attendees to meet and adopt, or at least start the process. And, you know, they're having a special reduction on cat adoption rates, too.
Yep.
Older cats, not kittens, are only $5 each. Of course, they're going to be all, you know, shots and the chip in their neck, and probably you can't pick them up at the event itself. I'm not sure about that, but usually it takes 2 days to process all the details. But that is a tremendous value and would certainly help the animals that need homes here in Dearborn. It is Staples Teacher Appreciation Day, and the first 100 teachers, Staples is in West Dearborn. There's a shopping center
Michigan,
there.
That's Westport.
Michigan and Outer.
That's where they'll adopt.
Michigan and Outer Drive, yeah.
That's where we'll be tomorrow.
Right. Yeah. And the first teachers, now, I've done this before. College teachers don't count. At least they didn't at Borders, when Borders were alive.
That's funny, because when Borders was alive, I homeschooled my son 1 year, and they recognized that as a teacher, and I got a huge discount.
Yeah, but it's only the first 100 teachers, but you can receive a free shopping bag and get 20% back. All the supplies that you can fit in the bag. So it's probably a little bag. No, but I'm just saying that's nice for teachers.
So cynical.
Back to School Health Fair is being held also tomorrow, Saturday, at Access Community Clinic. That's 6450 Maple Street in Dearborn. They're offering young people ages 13 to 18 the opportunity to have their hearts and vascular system evaluated by a team of specialists.
Awesome.
So, and I know there's the Woodward Dream Cruise today and tomorrow, but these local events are important too, and especially the Dearborn Heights firefighters trying to raise money and the animal shelter trying to get the cats out the door.
That access place is, you said it's on Maple, that's about halfway between Warren and Ford off Schaefer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't want to look it up on Google, you can find it just going up Schaefer.
And a last point, a sort of correction, it is the library that got the Adopt-A-Watt grant for a charging station for electric vehicles or plug-in vehicles, and those energy-efficient lights are all there, too. The main
parking
library
lot.
At Centennial.
Right.
Well, it's their lot. There's not an indoor lot. It's an outdoor
that's
lot.
That's what I'm saying, though. Yeah. So, but if they're not for inside the building itself.
No.
It's that's cool. Good.
Nope.
Awesome.
Mm-hmm. Inside, you can charge your cell phones, maybe,
yeah.
But that's not a car. All right. Well, thank you very much for listening. This is the show for today, but there's so much more, and you need to read those local Dearborn papers, one or the other each week yourself. Why not subscribe? You know, that's not a commercial. You need to subscribe to some papers. You can't do everything online. And Patch.com has nice stories, up to date, but they're not as long or in-depth as the papers. So support your local paper, whatever that might be. Thank you, Dennis, we'll be back here again next Friday.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah. Take care, everybody out there. And now it's WHFR Dearborn, continuing with Highway 61.
Highway 61, the longest highway that I know.